Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 34.
Two demons who get completely hilariously played. Chapter 34, it's this brilliant scene.
It really is. It shows Sun Wukong, the Monkey King, encountering these two, let's say, lower-level demons.
Right, not the big bosses. Two minor demons.
Tries to use his new fake gourd Wukong gave them to get this. Contain the sky.
Contain the sky with a fake gourd.
Yep. And naturally, clunk, it just falls flat. Doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
And the other one, he's a nimble worm. He panics instantly. He's like, wait, could it be Sun Wukong disguised as a god? Did he swap fakes for our real ones? Oh, is still trying to, you know, salvage the situation. And then he tries a spell, recites this kind of threat at the heavens, something like, if there's even half a refusal from the sky, I'm going to march up to the Hall of Miraculous Mist and start a war.
Threatening heaven itself.
Nothing happens. The gourd remains totally inert.
Oh, man. The realization must be hitting hard now.
Absolutely. They're like, it's not working. It must be a fake. Panic sets in. They know they're in deep trouble with their king. No treasures, no Wukong captured.
And meanwhile, where's the real Wukong?
Oh, he's loving this, floating invisibly up in the air, listening to the whole thing. The text says he heard clearly and saw everything. He knows they've been had.
So he's just watching them freak out.
Pretty much. He overhears their whole panicked conversation, their dawning horror. He realizes he needs to follow them before they, you know, regroup or alert the whole cave.
Makes sense.
He retrieves a transformation hair he'd cleverly left behind with the fake gourds. Then he changes shape again.
Into what this time?
A tiny fly. Super discreet.
Okay, a fly. But wait, how does a tiny fly carry magical gourds?
Ah, good question. This is where the magic system gets really cool. The story explains that Wukong's treasures, just like his famous staff, the Rui Jingu Bang.
The size-changing staff.
Exactly. These gourds are also Rui Buddha treasures. They can change size based on his will. They can become big or small.
So super convenient. He just shrinks them down.
Yep. Shrinks them down small enough for a fly to carry, apparently.
Yeah.
It really underlines how Wukong's own gear is just as tricky as he is.
Okay, so Wukong the fly follows the two panicked demons back to their cave. What's the scene there?
Inside, their two kings are just, you know, chilling, having drinks, relaxing.
Typical bosses.
Right.
Two minor demons.
Terrified. They have to explain how they lost the treasures.
How do they spin it? Do they admit Wukong tricked them?
Not directly. They try to save face. They say they were tricked by some deity from Penglai Mountain, a mythical, immortal place.
Blaming it on a god makes them look less foolish, I guess.
That seems to be the idea. They even claim this deity also had a gourd that could contain the sky to make their story sound slightly more plausible.
Does the king buy it?
Not the first king. He goes ballistic. Oh, thunderously furious. He sees right through it.
What does he say?
He basically shouts, enough, enough. This has Sun Wukong written all over it. Disguised as a god, tricking you. That monkey has incredible powers. He knows everyone. Who knows which minor spirit led him out to steal our treasures?
So he knows Wukong's reputation. No fooling him.
Not for a second. He instantly recognizes Wukong's MO.
Okay, so one king is furious. What about the other one?
The second king is a bit more pragmatic. Still angry, definitely, but focused on what's next. He says something like, okay, we had five treasures, two were gone, but we still have three. We must capture him.
Five treasures. Okay, so they still have backup. What are the other three?
He reveals them. The Kexin Jing.
Yes.
The Seven Star Sword. And the sea in Bajiyoshan.
The plantain leaf fan. That sounds familiar.
It becomes very important later, yeah. He has both of those. But the third one, the really crucial one, it seems, is Hengxin Sheng.
Hengxin Sheng.
The golden lasso.
This magical rope.
And get this, it's not even in the cave.
Where is it then?
It's kept by their mother. Their old mother, who lives in another cave on another mountain. Dragon-suppressing mountain, dragon-suppressing cave.
Their mother has the golden lasso. Okay, how do they plan to get it?
They decide to invite her over for a feast. They're going to serve Tang Monk's flesh.
Charming. With a promise of eating the monk, hoping she brings the golden lasso to help capture Wukong.
That's the plan.
This magical rope sounds nasty. And wouldn't you know it, our hero, Sun Wukong, happens to be listening in.
He overhears the whole plan, which is crucial, obviously.
So he sends out two minor demons. Their names are Bashanhu and Yi Hailong. Go get their grandmother, who is apparently another more powerful demon.
Right. So this leads to the fun part, the disguise.
Yes. Classic Wukong. He lets the two demons get a little bit ahead, just far enough so they won't immediately notice.
Playing it cool.
Then poof, changes shape,
mm-hmm.
turns himself into another small demon. The book even gives details, like he puts on a fox skin hat.
And wears his tiger skin skirt backwards, which is just a wonderful little touch.
It really is. So he catches up to one of them, Yehelong, and starts chatting.
I mean, he's got this whole story ready. He's basically pretending to be another messenger sent by the big boss.
Yeah, telling them to hurry up. Like, the king's getting impatient. Where have you guys been?
It's brilliant psychological manipulation, playing on their likely fear of the boss. Yehelong is completely convinced. Mm. All suspicion just evaporates.
Wow. Okay, so he's got them fooled. Yeah. He finds out they're, what, 15 or 16 live from their cave?
Yeah, a few miles. And that the grandmother lives in the nearby Black Forest, the text calls it.
Got the info he needed, so now what?
Well, now he doesn't need the messengers anymore. He got the information, neutralized the threat, and protected his plan. Very efficient.
Okay, so messengers dealt with, but he's not done with the disguises yet, is he?
Not by a long shot. This is where it gets even more clever. He needs to become the messengers.
How does he do that? Does he transform again?
He does. He plucks out one of his magical hairs, blows on it, says the spell, and bam, the hair becomes Bashanhu, the first demon. And then he himself transforms into the second demon, Yehelong. So now he's got a perfect copy, and he's playing the other part.
The text even has that line about his powers, right?
Huh.
His 72 transformations are powerful. His ability to manipulate objects is masterful. It's really emphasizing his core skills here. Shapeshifting is his superpower.
So this fake Bashanhu, the hare, and fake Yehelong's son Wukong, they head off to the grandmother's place.
The Yehelong cave.
And the description is great. Stone doors, half open. Kind of creepy.
He stops and calls out first, "Open up, open the door."
So a female demon, a guard, peeks out, asks who it is.
And Wukong, as Yehelong, just repeats the story. "We're from the Lotus Cave, Pingding Mountain, sent to fetch the grandmother."
And she buys it.
Okay, so he gets inside to a second gate, peeks through, and there she is, the grandmother demon.
And the description the text gives is just incredible, really paints a picture.
Read it. It's worth hearing.
Okay, let's see. "Snowy hair, loose and messy, starlight gleaming, reddish face with many wrinkles, sparse teeth, but strong spirit."
Wow.
"Appearance like a withered chrysanthemum in frost, form like an old pine after rain. Head wrapped in white silk gauze, gold and jeweled rings hanging from ears."
That's amazing. Old, wrinkled, maybe a bit frail looking in parts, but still strong. Formidable.
Exactly. You get this sense of age, but also power.
Now here's the really weird part. Sun Wukong sees her and starts crying outside the gate.
Yeah. Such an unexpected reaction. You'd think he'd be feeling pretty smug, right? Plan's working perfectly.
Totally. So why the tears? Is he suddenly scared of her?
No, the text is very clear. It's not fear. The fact that he, the great sage equal to heaven, is about to have to kowtow to kneel down to this demon.
Oh, okay. It's about his pride.
It's absolutely about his pride. He has this whole internal thought process, remembering who he has knelt to before.
How was that?
The Buddha, the Bodhisattva Guanyin, and his master, Tang Monk, for saving his life. That's basically it. A very short list.
So kneeling to a random demon, that's a big deal for him.
Huge. He thinks about all the effort, using up his liver and lungs, as the text puts it, for this quest. And he has this moment of doubt, like, is one scripture worth this humiliation, debasing myself before this monster?
That adds so much depth in him. It's not just about being clever. He's actually suffering here.
He really is. That conflict between his immense pride and his loyalty to his master and the mission, it's fierce. He knows he has to do it, but it hurts. The line that sums it up is bitter. In the end, it's all because my master is in trouble that I have to suffer this humiliation.
Wow. Okay, so he pulls himself together.
He does. Swallows that pride, goes in, performs the full kowtow, and calls her, ooh, grandmother.
And how does she react?
She's completely fooled, totally pleased, tells her dear grandson to get up. Wukong even thinks to himself, wow, she really sounds like she means it.
You can't resist a little internal commentary.
Never. Then he repeats the fake story again. We're here to invite you to come eat Pang Meng's flesh. And oh, by the way, please bring the Hungjin rope so we can catch Sun Wukong.
Smooth. And she's delighted.
Absolutely thrilled. The idea of eating the monk and catching Wukong, that's like Christmas for her.
So she immediately orders her servants, get the sedan chair ready.
Yep. And Wukong, again, has this little internal sarcastic thought. Huh, demons use sedan chairs.
It's kind of mundane, isn't it?
It is. These two female demons bring out this fancy rattan chair, blue silk curtains, the works. She gets in, and all these other minor demons bring out her travel kit.
Like what?
Incense boxes, mirror stands, hand towels. Surprisingly normal stuff.
Weirdly domestic for a powerful demon setting off to capture the Monkey King.
It adds this strange, almost darkly comic touch, doesn't it?
Yeah. So does the whole entourage go with her?
No, and this is another stroke of luck for Wukong. The grandmother decides she doesn't need the whole gang. She tells everyone else to go back and guard the cave.
Leaving just?
Just the two imposters. Son Wukong as Yihai Long and his hair clone as Bishanhu.
Perfect. Fewer witnesses.
Exactly. She even asks their names, and Wukong smoothly gives the fake ones again, Bishanhu and Yihai Long.
She's completely taken in.
Hook, line, and sinker.
And then comes the final irony.
Oh, it's beautiful. She tells them, well, tells Wukong to lead the way out.
So Son Wukong, the great sage, has to basically act as her footman.
He has to lead the procession. And he's just fuming internally. He thinks, what rotten luck, haven't even gotten the scriptures, and now I'm playing servant for a demon.
You can just feel him gritting his teeth.
Absolutely. But he has to do it. He even has to, like, call out loudly to announce their coming, playing the part of the dutiful servant.
Get a little bit ahead.
A few miles.
He pulls off something. Well, very Wukong.
He really does. He plucks out a hair.
Of course.
And turns it into a giant pancake.
So the pancake is just this perfect distraction. And it works. He stops the chair, deals with the fox demon, and then he delivers that amazing line after he defeats her.
Oh, the arrogant one. Yes.
Basically, you vile thing, calling yourself grandmother. If you're grandmother, you should call me great-great-grandfather.
Huh.
And he loves to rub it in.
He does. And strategically, this whole encounter is vital because he gets something important out of it.
Ah, right. The magic item.
The magic rope. He takes it from her. So, okay, he's got the rope. He's dealt with the grandmother. But he doesn't stop there.
No, he dials the deception way up. What's the next step?
This is where it gets really elaborate. He doesn't just disguise himself. He creates, like, a whole fake entourage.
Using more hairs, I assume.
You got it. More hairs. Two become these porters. Then two more hares become sedan chair carriers. And Wukong himself, he transforms into the old demon he just defeated.
Wow. So it's a disguise within a disguise, almost. He's really thinking about how this looks.
He totally is. He understands how these demon societies work, or at least how to exploit their expectations.
And it works. The gatekeepers at the cave, they just let him in.
Pretty much. There's that almost funny exchange, you know. They are. Where's the grandmother?
And the transformed hairs just point, isn't she in the chair?
Yeah, just like that.
Hierarchy over scrutiny.
Seems like it. And Wukong, you know, he's even mentally chuckling about it, thinking how he'll at least get a couple of bows out of the demon brothers.
Oh, Dookie, even if it's nothing much, he'll trick them into bowing. That mischievous ego shining through.
Totally. He's enjoying the performance.
Okay, so the disguised Wukong and his hair crew make their grand entrance into the Lotus Flower Cave. What's the welcome like?
It's pretty grand, actually, which kind of emphasizes the demon's respect or maybe fear of this grandmother figure.
Right.
Inside, all the lesser demons are kneeling. There's music, incense, the whole nine yards. A proper welcome.
A real ceremony.
And Wukong just steps right into the role, sits in the main hall, takes the seat of honor.
Playing the part perfectly.
And when the two demon brothers, the Silverhorn King and the Goldhorn King, kneel and say, Mother, your children bow.
He just replies, My children rise. So calm, so authoritative.
He's completely owning it.
He's there for a reason.
Immortality.
Ah, Tang monk's flesh.
You guessed it. They've caught the monk. They think eating him grants long life. And they've invited Mother to join the feast.
Which puts Wukong in a bit of a bind.
Right. And what he comes up with is just...
What does he suggest instead?
He basically says, My children, I don't really fancy Tang monk's flesh, but I've heard pixie's ears are quite good. Maybe cut those off and prepare them for me to snack on with some wine.
Oh my goodness. Pixie's ears, that's terrible. But also, kind of genius.
It is. Strategically brilliant. Diverts attention from Tang Monk, and he gets to torment Pigsy, which, let's be honest, Wukong enjoys.
He really does. Dark humor, definitely. And speaking of Pigsy,
mm-hmm.
He's actually there, isn't he? Hanging around.
Literally hanging around. Yes, poor Pigsy's tied up and hanging from the rafters inside the cave.
What a spot to be in. And he hears all this about his ears being on the menu.
He does, and he bursts out laughing. Can you imagine?
Laughing at a time like that. Yeah. Why?
Well, maybe the sheer absurdity, or just Wukong's audacity, but it definitely draws attention. Sandy, who's also tied up, is like, second brother, laughing while you're hanging.
Understandable confusion.
And Pigsy says something like, brother, there's a reason for my laughter. He knows. He's recognized Wukong.
Ah, so he explains it to Sandy.
Yeah, he says, well, we were scared Grandma was coming to steam us. But it's not Grandma, it's an old friend.
An old acquaintance, indeed. But how did he know? Wukong's transformation was good enough to fool the demons.
This is the best part. Pigsy, because he's hanging upside down, sees something no one else does.
A different perspective. What does he spot?
When Wukong, as the old demon, tells the demon brothers to rise to Rugon, bends down slightly.
A feeder.
Pigsy sees it. Behind him, he's sort of unconsciously tucked up his monkey tail.
No.
The tail.
The tail. That little involuntary monkey habit, it gave him away. Even the best magic couldn't hide that ingrained quirk.
Wow. And Pixie, realizing his ears are genuinely on the line and knowing it's Wukong, he panics, right?
Oh, yeah. He shouts out, "Curse you! You came to cut off my ears!" Shouting this out won't sound good.
A bit late for subtlety, Pixie.
Just a bit. And that shout, and that's it. The whole game is up.
The other demons hear him instantly. The news just rips through the cave. Patrols, gatekeepers, everyone rushing in. Great King, disaster! Sun Wukong killed grandmother and he's here in disguise.
Exactly. The jig is up. Swiftly and dramatically.
And the Demon King's reaction. No hesitation, I bet.
None at all. He hears the news, draws his sword, that seven-star sword, and just attacks Wukong immediately.
The elder demon brother, he clearly knows something about Monkey King, or at least the legend. He's scared.
So his immediate thought is,
give it all back. Return the precious items. Just, avoid the fight altogether. It's cautious, maybe even wise in a way.
yeah, cut his losses before they get bigger.
Yeah.
But then there's the younger brother, totally different attitude.
Oh, completely. He's all pride. Just radiates off the page, like you said. Refuses point blank to back down. Thinks he can handle it. It's that classic mistake, right? Judging an opponent on like incomplete intel.
And he has this specific idea, doesn't he, though? Like 3 rounds of combat.
Yeah, he figures if he can just stand up to Monkey King for 3 quick rounds, well, then maybe he's proven his strength. And crucially, Tang Monk is still potentially on the menu.
Oof, cold calculation there. Okay, so Mr. Confident decides to go for it. He gears up to face Monkey King. And the description of him getting ready, it's pretty intense.
Oh, it's fantastic. The author really paints a picture. You get the Tsiyuyu, that's the phoenix helmet, so bright it like outshines snow, dazzling.
Deceiving white snow.
Wow.
And the armor.
Battle armor swaying, made of refined iron. It implies its heavy, high quality looks imposing when he moves.
And the details. A pief, a python dragon tendon belt. Sounds incredibly strong.
Right. Strength. Maybe flexibility too. And then this surprising touch, boom, pink leather boots with plum blossom folds.
Pink boots. A bit unexpected for a demon warrior.
It is, but it all adds up. The text makes these pretty direct comparisons to really powerful figures. That's Erlang Shen, a famous warrior god.
Okay, so top tier.
And Tay, the giant spirit, known for, well, being giant and strong. So the message is clear. This guy looks the part. He's formidable. It shows how important visuals were, to convey power back then.
And his weapon can't be ignored either, the seven-star sword.
Yeah, and it's described as radiating, basically anger soaring to the sky, majestic, fierce. This sword means business. It's like an extension of his whole vibe.
So this impressive, maybe slightly over-the-top demon flies up to meet Monkey King, who's, usually hanging out in midair.
Right. And the demon lays out his demand. Give me back my precious things.
And if I do?
Then your master, Tang Monk, gets safe passage. Simple trade. Or so he thinks. It's a power play, right? Negotiating from what he thinks is strength.
But this is Monkey King we're talking about. Politeness isn't really his style when his friends are hostages.
Not even slightly. His reply is just classic Monkey King, super insulting. Calls the demon a villainous monster, a scoundrel. Makes it clear he's not scared.
No intimidation here. He just flips it right back, doesn't he?
Totally. He demands the stuff back, the companions, their luggage, and throws in a demand for travel money, like compensation for the trouble.
You gotta love the nerve. Travel money.
And then the threat, right? Refuse, and well, you'll face my staff. It's bold. It's provocative. It's all about showing who's boss.
Does it work? Does the demon back down?
Not this one. The younger demon, fueled by that pride, just attacks. Seven-star sword comes flashing down.
And Monkey King's ready.
Always. Meets him with his own legendary weapon, the golden hoop staff. And the text says something really telling here.
Right.
A worthy opponent met, a talented general encountered. It signals right away, this isn't going to be easy for either of them. They're well matched.
Okay, so the fight is on.
And it's epic. The descriptions are amazing.
Yeah.
Tigers fighting on the southern mountains, dragons battling in the northern sea. It gives you the sense of raw, elemental fury.
Huge scale, clashing weapons back and forth.
Just relentless. Swords flashing, staff whirling. The narrative says they go for 30 rounds straight with no clear winner. It really shows that, yeah, magic items are cool, but skill, experience, that matters too.
30 rounds. Okay, so after all that, Monkey King has a thought.
He does. He kind of realizes, wait a second, I already got what I came for. I have their magical treasures. Why am I still messing around fighting this guy?
So, time for a new tactic. What's the plan?
Use their own magic against them. He decides to pull out one of the treasures he acquired.
This magical rope. Golden lasso.
Okay, clever.
Fight fire with fire.
Okay.
Or magic with magic.
Right. The plan is simple. Zap the younger demon with his own lasso, tie him up, done deal.
And does it work?
Initially, yes. It's a neat move. He whips out the lasso, uses it skillfully, and bam, the demon is caught. Looks like game over.
But I sense a but coming.
Oh, it's a big but. This is where things get really interesting. Turns out, the demon knows the magic words for his own treasure.
The instruction manual.
Pretty much. He knows the tightening spell and, crucially, the loosening spell.
So when he's caught in his own lasso.
He recognizes it. He knows what it is, knows the counterspell, recites the loosening spell, and just slips right out.
Whoa. Okay, that's a twist.
Mastery isn't just possession.
And now the demon has his lasso back. This isn't good.
Not good at all, because the first thing he does, he takes that golden lasso and throws it right back at Monkey King.
Oh no, he catches him.
He does, a brilliant reversal. Monkey King is totally caught off guard.
Can't he just, like, shrink himself? He does that all the time, right?
As his go-to escape move, he instinctively tries to use his shrinking magic to just slide out of the ropes. Mm-hmm. Usually works like a charm.
But not this time.
Nope. The demon is ready. He immediately shouts the other spell, the CISO, the tightening spell.
Oh, tightening it. So shrinking won't help.
Exactly. The lasso just constricts faster than he can shrink, cinching down tighter and tighter until it's like this solid gold ring clamped around his neck. He's trapped. You can almost feel how uncomfortable that must be.
Trapped and uncomfortable. And the demon's not done, is he?
Not by a long shot. He presses the attack, striking Monkey King with that seven-star sword.
Does he hurt him? I mean, his Monkey King.
That's the incredible part. The demon hits him hard, but the text makes a point of saying Monkey King's skin doesn't even turn red. Nothing. No mark.
Wow. Okay, so ridiculously tough.
Understatement. It speaks volumes about his, you know, cultivation, his inherent power. Nearly indestructible. Even magical swords have limits against him. Makes you really wonder what could hurt him.
The demon must be shocked. His best weapon doing nothing.
Absolutely stunned. He can't believe it. So he has to switch gears again. What's the point in hacking away if it does nothing?
Right. So new plan.
If you can't beat him up, take him prisoner. He decides to just haul the captured Monkey King back to their pave. It's pragmatic, really. Secure the prisoner, figure out what to do next. Show some adaptability, I guess.
And before they go, insult to injury time.
You know it. The demon searches the now-bound Monkey King and takes back his other treasures, the Dia Gourd and the Shade Jade Vase, the very things Monkey King took in the first place.
Ouch. So Monkey King is captured, and he lost the loot that started this whole mess.
Double ouch. Monkey King being led back to the cave, tied to a pillar, and Ick and the two demon brothers. They're cracking open drinks, celebrating their totally unexpected victory.
A rare defeat for the great sage equal to heaven. Sun Wukong, even tied up, he manages to talk to Pigsy.
And Pigsy being Pigsy?
Oh, completely. Total pessimist. He's got these amazing lines like lamenting his ears are now uneatable.
Uneatable. Oh, Pigsy.
And joking they'll all be asking for directions in the underworld, you know.
It really sets the mood, though. They're in serious danger.
Absolutely. But even with Pigsy's doom and gloom, you can tell Sun Wukong's brain is already like worrying.
He's observing.
Constantly. Watching the demons drinking downstairs, noticing the guards seem kind of lax. Seeing the little demons going back and forth with, you know, trays and wine. He's scouting for weakness. an opening.
Right, right. And then the magic happens.
You got it.
Right.
While he's having this morbid chat with Pigsy, the escape plan is forming. He spots his chance.
And the staff, the Rui Jingu Bang.
Exactly. He whiffs out his amazing staff, the one that can change size, do almost anything, and boom, transforms it into a steel file.
Wow.
And the text makes a point of how fast it is. Just like 3 or 5 strokes, it says. And he saws right through that neck ring holding him.
That's incredible speed. But he doesn't just bolt.
No. No, he's smarter than that. He needs more time. So he plucks a hair.
Standard Monkey King move.
Right. Blows on it. And presto, a perfect double of himself left tied to the pillar.
So it looks like he's still there. Genius.
And while that's happening, the real son, Wukong, he uses another transformation.
Hmm.
Shrinks down. Becomes like a tiny, insignificant demon.
Blending right in, like you said, multitasking.
It's such a clever opening. Shows his wit, his mastery of magic. He's not just escaping, he's going undercover.
To gather intel, maybe help the others.
Precisely. But, well, you know how things go when Pigsy's involved.
Oh, no. What does Pigsy do? Don't tell me.
Yep. Sun Wukong pulls off this perfect switcheroo.
And Pigsy. Still hanging there.
Still hanging. Sees the fake monkey and just yells out, not good, not good. The one tied up is a fake. The one hanging is the real deal.
Ark! Pigsy! You can almost hear Sun Wukong facepalming. Why'd he do that? Just panic.
Probably. Panic. Maybe not quite getting the subtlety of the plan. Kixi's not exactly known for his cool head.
So that blows his cover.
Well, it alerts the Demon King, definitely. Big commotion. What's going on? But Sun Wukong, still disguised, thinks incredibly fast.
What does he do?
Steps forward, acts like just another minor demon, and completely redirects the blame.
Onto Pigsy.
Onto Pigsy. Suggests the pig's just confused, that he misunderstood some escape plan Sun Wukong supposedly mentioned earlier.
Ha! Huh. That is classic Sun Wukong,
yeah.
Turning disaster into something else.
And the Demon King buys it, says Pigsy, even though he's usually honest, is clearly unreliable this time.
Does Pigsy get punished?
The demon threatens him with 20-odd mouth slaps. And then we get this hilarious bit between the disguised Sun Wukong and Pigsy.
Oh, yeah.
Sun Wukong pretends he's going to hit Pigsy with a stick.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And Pigsy's like, hit me gently. I'll know it's you if it's too hard.
Seriously.
And then, the best part. Pigsy claims he recognizes Sun Wukong by his red bottom.
His what now? Red bottom, that's specific. And weirdly funny.
Totally absurd.
Yeah.
But it just highlights Pigsy's, what's a unique way of seeing things.
So how does Sun Wukong handle that?
Instantly.
Hmm.
Doesn't miss a beat, marches over to the kitchen, finds a cooking pot.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yep. Rubs soot from the bottom all over his backside, comes back.
And Pigsy.
Pigsy just observes, oh, now he's got a black backside.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
He goes up to the Demon King, pretending to be helpful.
Helpful how?
Says something like, hey, look, that monkey's struggling so much, he's damaging the rope you tied him with. You need something stronger.
No way. He suggests replacing the rope.
He does. And the Demon King, he's either really arrogant or maybe had a bit too much demon wine.
Or both.
Probably both. He totally falls for it. Takes off his own lion-binding belt from his waist and just hands it over to the disguised Sun Wukong.
Sun Wukong has the belt. What now?
Quick as a flash, uses the belt to tie up his fake clone double on the pillar.
Okay.
Then he bundles up the original rope, the one the clone was tied with, and tucks it away in his sleeve. The text says he nestles it away. Well, Sun Wukong does one more trick. Plucks another hair. Breathes on it.
Makes a fake rope.
Exactly. A fake version of the original Huang Jin Sheng. The golden rope. Presented to the Demon King.
And the demon.
Doesn't suspect a thing. Probably still distracted by the drinking, the earlier commotion. He just takes the fake rope.
Sun Wukong's cunning is just off the charts. Exploiting every weakness.
It's not just brute force with him, is it?
Yeah.
It's intelligence, magic, trickery. He makes a quick exit, gets outside the cave, transforms back into his glorious Monkey King form, and lets out this huge shout, you know, monster! The demon guarding the gate is, like, totally startled. Who are you? What do you want?
And Sun Wukong's reply, I bet it's good.
Oh, it's classic. Go tell your wicked demon that the Speaker of Deeds son is here, announcing his return like he owns the place.
Speaker of Deeds son is Xi Xing son. Okay, so chaos inside the cave, I assume?
Total confusion. The first demon is baffled. How can there be another Sun Wukong? We caught one. The second demon steps up, full of swagger. He's like, brother, don't worry. The treasures are all with me. And he grabs his magic gourd.
Ah, the gourd.
He's super confident this gourd will handle anything. Thinks he's got this totally under control.
But fresh is out.
Rushes out, gourd ready, and sees. Well, someone who looks like Sun Wukong, but maybe a little shorter.
A clone.
The demon demands to know who this is.
And the clone.
Plays along. Claims to be Sun Wukong's brother. Here for revenge.
This is getting complicated.
And then the second demon reveals how his gourd works. It's pretty unique.
How does it work?
He doesn't fight. He just calls out your name. If you answer, whoosh, you get sucked into the gourd.
Just like that. Answer your name and you're trapped.
That's the deal. So he challenges the clone. I won't even fight you. I'll just call your name. Dare you to answer.
And the clone keeps up the act.
Taunts him. Call away. Call all the names you want. The demon holds the gourd, mouth down, and yells out. He yells, Zuring Sun. And Sun Wukong hears it and pauses. He knows it's dangerous.
He debates it.
Yeah, there's this internal moment. He thinks about his real name, Sun Wukong, and this other name, Zuring Sun. He figures this assumed name, this ghost name, as he thinks of it, surely that won't work.
So he can't resist.
He can't. He answers instantly.
Yeah.
Sucked right into the gourd. Slap. A paper seal goes over the opening. He's caught.
Wow. Just like that. And the irony.
The narrator points out the gourd doesn't care if it's a real name or a fake name. It just grabs whoever answers the call.
A tough lesson. Even for the Monkey King. Mistakes happen.
Definitely. And suddenly, he's inside this thing. What's it like?
Pitch black. He tries to push, to break out, but nothing. It's completely sealed.
And then he remembers.
He remembers what the demon said. That anyone trapped inside gets turned into, well...
Puss.
Yeah. Dissolved into pus in about an hour or so. Pretty grim.
Yikes. Okay, that sounds bad. Panic time.
You'd think so. A wave of it must have hit him. But then Sun Wukong's Sun Wukong, right?
True. He's got resilience.
He thinks back, remembers all the insane stuff he survived, especially that time in Lao Tzu's furnace.
The 8 trigrams furnace, where he was burned for 49 days.
Right. He basically reminds himself, hey, I was forged in heavenly fire. I've got a heart of gold, lungs of silver, head of copper, back of iron, fiery eyes, you know?
He's basically indestructible or close to it.
He figures, I've been through way worse than some dark gourd. So, okay, he's in there.
What's his escape plan this time?
It's genius. He doesn't try to break out. He plays dissolving. And his initial ideas for doing that are peeing inside to make a noise.
Right. Don't want to soil the outfit, which is kind of funny given the circumstance.
Oh, priorities, right. So then he considers using saliva instead.
Using whatever's available. Basic bodily functions even. But he quickly moves past that to something more theatrical.
Okay, yeah, this is where it gets really good. He starts pretending he's actually melting.
Uh-huh. He calls out like, oh no, my legs are dissolving.
Then
his arms, his torso.
Yeah.
A whole dramatic performance.
He's basically baiting them.
Baiting them to do what?
To open the gourd. To check on their dissolving prisoner. That's the opening he needs.
Okay. So how does he actually manage the escape when they do open it? This feels like peak Monkey King.
Oh, it is. This is where his transformation powers are key. He plucks out one of his hairs.
And transforms it into, like, a fake lower half of his body, looking all melted at the bottom of the gourd.
Wow.
But his real self, he shrinks down super tiny, like an insect, and just clings right near the opening, completely hidden in plain sight almost.
So clever. The demon opens it up, sees the fake melted body.
Yep, sees the hair body, thinks, job done. Completely fooled.
Wukong, still tiny, zips out.
While the demons are off celebrating, you know, drinking wine, thinking they've won.
The irony.
Wukong sees his next chance, the gourd swap.
Right. How does he pull that off?
Well, he's watching them, sees they're distracted. He uses another hair, transforms it into a perfect replica of the magical gourd.
No way.
Yep. And while they're not looking closely, preoccupied with their wine and victory, he quickly swaps the fake gourd for the real one.
And they just take it.
They just take it. They're so pleased with themselves, they don't even check properly. They just accept the fake.
Amazing. Yeah. Which leads him to think something like, doesn't matter how tricky this demon is, the gourd's still mine.
Exactly. It really captures his confidence, his wit. He just completely turned the tables using brains, not just magic power.